Welcome to the Disney Parks Podcast with your hosts, Tony Castelnova from DisneyByTheNumbers.com and Parkhopper John from WDWParkhoppers.com. Keep your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast at all times and get ready for the Disney Parks Podcast.
Have you ever come to Orlando and you're the person that has to make all the dining plans, all the fast passes, get all the tickets? Well, we have a service that can help you do this. This is the best service. They are themeparkconcierge.com. You can call them up at 407-257-9973. Tell them your plans. They'll send you a little profile, get some information about you and your traveling party, what you want to do, what you don't want to do, and then they can set up a custom plan for you. And they'll take you around the parks. They'll make the dining plans. They'll get the fast passes. They'll take you to Walt Disney World. They'll take you to Universal. They'll take you to Busch Gardens, to SeaWorld, to Legoland, to all of those places, and they will do all of the work for you. Contact them at themeparkconcierge.com. Check them out on Facebook at facebook.com/RamonVIPconcierge or email them at ramon@themeparkconcierge.com. I am telling you, you will not be disappointed. And if you tell them the Disney Parks Podcast sent you, you'll get 10% off your order.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Disney Parks Podcast. We have a tremendous guest with us tonight. The not-so-evil stepmother, a.k.a. Trisha Dobb, is the proud mom slash bonus mom of five incredible Disney-loving kids. Now, her first book, A Not-So-Evil Stepmother in the Most Magical Place on Earth, is incredible, and we're going to talk about that. Plus, we've heard rumors of a second book. It may or may not have to do with food. We're going to get into that maybe a little bit in just a few moments, but welcome to the show, Trisha Dobb, everybody.
Thank you. Very excited to be here.
Fantastic. Trisha, we'd like to ask everybody, you know, how did your Disney journey begin? How did you become a Disney junkie? It seems like you've made quite a few trips. You've written a book about it. So there must be some fuel behind this passion.
It started when I was very little. My grandma took us to Disney when I was about 3 years old. I don't obviously remember any of the trip, but it really started a passion there, just having family members that really loved Disney. And I had family from Florida. So when you're from Gainesville, Florida, Disney is like one of the only things to do to get away from the mosquitoes and the alligators. So that really started it off for them, as I had a lot of family in the area and they loved Disney. And it really actually picked up quite a bit when my husband and I got married at Disney in 2005. So we were fortunate. We had a Disney wedding where we brought together our two families, and we did our 10-year anniversary trip in 2015, where we took a group of 11. And planning a Disney vacation for a group of 11, you learn a lot. And that was when I decided to write a book about all that I had learned, because I had seen there are so many amazing guidebooks out there, but I realized there weren't too many that were really geared towards blended families, you know, stepmoms, stepdads, big groups of people that are going. And so I thought I could offer that voice into all of the great Disney books that are already out there, is having something really for those folks that are going with big groups of people, have the blended families. And then we also really love the food. So there is a lot of Disney food love in this first book.
Sweet. That's awesome. So tell me a little bit about how you got the moniker the not-so-evil stepmother.
It's really funny. That was one of the things that came to me very early on with the book, was obviously the whole evil stepmother is something that Disney has really used in quite a few movies, and it's really just kind of one of those things that's associated with Disney. And we had this running joke with my kids. So I have three bonus kids. And the running joke was, the second my husband and I said I do, I was going to turn into this evil stepmother, and my head was going to start spinning, and my eyes were going to start glowing, and my hair was going to turn into horns. And so when you look at the cover art on the book, you'll see that it reflects that. I have evil red eyebrows and horns. And so that was the running joke, is that I would become this this evil stepmother. And so when we were playing around, when I was working with the publisher on the title of the book, that was really kind of where we landed, was on being a not so evil stepmother, because most stepmoms, hopefully, fingers crossed, most of us out there are not that evil.
Right. Unless you're in a Disney movie. Right. Then all bets are off.
Disney movies, for whatever reason, stepmoms get a really bad rap. But I've been fortunate enough. I have a stepmom, and she's not so evil. I think my sons from that are not bonus kids would probably say, they would say I'm more evil than my bonus kids probably would.
Well, you don't want to be the mother, because they also die in the movie usually too.
In the Disney
movie. Or they never exist in the first place.
So stepmother actually lives. Yeah.
There's some problems with the Disney World movies and the moms and the stepmoms. There's, you know, it's a psychoanalyst dream. Well, that's good that you're the not so evil stepmom.
Right. Right. All right. So before we talk about the book a little bit, tell us about the woman who you dedicated this book to, your grandmother.
My grandma was such a role model for me my whole life. And she's the reason I really pushed myself to actually put the book out there to a publisher. She unfortunately passed away just a few months before the book came out, but she knew I was writing it. She was really the person that got me very excited about Disney from the beginning. And just somebody, you know how you have that person that always had your back your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just that person for me. And I learned so many important lessons from her. And so when I was writing and figuring out really who to dedicate this book for, she was the only person I could really, I mean, I'm so fortunate. I have a huge family with the kids, and I married my best friend, but it was really visiting her one day, and I told her, hey, I'm writing a book. And I saw her blue eyes light up, and she unfortunately was suffering from dementia at the time. But it was one of those coherent moments, and she was very excited for me, and she made it very clear that I should do this. And I went home that night and emailed Bob McLean at Theme Park Press and sent him a synopsis. And a couple of days later, he emailed me back and said, great, can you do 45,000 words, and when can you have it done?
Wow.
So it was really, she was really a big part of getting me excited to really see this through and get it completed.
Mm, that's awesome. Sorry about your loss.
It's when you've dealt with somebody, I'm not sure if you've dealt with that with someone with dementia and Alzheimer's, sometimes they're finally at peace, and it was hard, but she, till the end, we would see those fiery blue eyes come out every now and then.
Yeah. My grandmother had the same thing, and we lost her a couple of years ago. So, funny story, not funny, but funny story about that. My grandmother never wanted to ever ruin an occasion. So my birthday was on October 8th, and my grandmother passed away on the 9th because she didn't want to ruin my birthday.
Wow.
So it's great when you have people in your life like that. I loved your dedication, especially because it resonated with something that my wife's mom did, you know, taught her to wear heels because they made her legs look good. That resonated with me. I thought that was classic. That was just such a good line, because it reminded me of my mother-in-law. So I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah, my grandma was so funny when we did a video dedication for her at the funeral. I know we're kind of getting off on a sadder tangent here, but I found all these amazing pictures of her from the 50s, and just, I love that style with the A-line dresses, and she always had these fabulous heels on and just always looked very polished, and it was really neat to see a lot of those pictures, going back and finding those. And I also found, when I was working on this, pictures from one of the first trips to Disney. I remember when I was 10, and I had this amazing 90s mullet hair, and we have a picture with Chewbacca, and you can't tell the difference between my hair and Chewie's fur. It is classic.
That's awesome. And, you know, it's good to get to know, you know, that's why we do the podcast, because the people that we've met got to know our lives. And so we matter to them, and I think that it's good that we get to know you a little bit more, because your book, really, honestly, I want you to kind of give an overview of the book, but from my reading, is really kind of an overview. It's almost like a super helpful diary of these trips. You know, lots of tips, lots of secrets that you give away. So it's great. So it's great to get to know a little bit more about you. But from your perspective, how would you describe the book to other people?
The way I always tell people about it is that, and my husband actually described it best. He's like, it's like you're sitting down and having cocktails with your girlfriend who knows a lot about Disney, and she's helping you plan your vacation while telling you stories of hers. Right. And that's really what I set out to write. I actually really originally didn't necessarily set out to write a guidebook. It was more wanting to write about these trips that we've had, these experiences that we had. And then as I was writing, I was thinking, oh yeah, I remember, tell people, use an umbrella stroller. Oh yeah, remember, tell people to make sure they're dressed in layers because Floridians love their air conditioning. You know, just all these things that I would tell people when they would ask me for advice on planning trips, because in our circle of friends, everyone would always come to me and ask me about, well, how do I do this? And where should I go? And what's some things that I should know? And so really the way that I would describe it is how you said it best. It's almost a diary, but has tips on planning and some of the different things that you need to think about when you're going to Disney, whether you're going there with kids in their 20s or whether you're going there with 4 and 5 year olds. There are a lot of different things that we talk about in there. And my parents also came along. So we've had grandparents with our group as well as smaller kids, and just a lot of experiences and so many magical ones. And Disney has really played a role in our family coming together and forming a family. And that was also a message and kind of a theme that was throughout the book, is the role that Disney's really played in bringing this family together.
So would you say that you're a detailed park planner? You have the itinerary, you have a day by day, hour by hour kind of itinerary for everybody, or do you kind of wing some of it? And, you know, why do you think you're a detailed planner? Because my cousin's coming down here for a trip, and he sent me like this 3-tab Excel workbook. And I was like, oh my God. It's like a minute by minute, blow by blow of everything that's going to happen on the trip. So
it's so funny you say that, because my family would say I'm like a drill sergeant, and we're going to be here, we're going to be here, we're going to be here. And really with the fast pass pluses, it's become like that a little bit more. I feel like you're planning even more. Now there's the benefit of you have those things that are on your must see list, and you're basically reserving the ability to see those. So it's almost freeing in the sense that you get those boxes checked, but it really does put you on even more of a schedule of, you know, you probably don't really want to be on Big Thunder Mountain at 3 o'clock and then trying to race over and get to a reservation over in Tomorrowland, you know, 20 minutes later. It does set you up a little bit for having to think about some of it in advance. But I would say it really depends on the trip. When we went with a group of 11, when you've got 11, you have to plan. There is no way to get 11 people in to be our guests without serious commitment to a plan and serious commitment to getting that reservation. But I also think I've relaxed a little bit on some things depending on the trip that I'm on. So I was so fortunate. My son and I went down in December. It was just myself and my now 17-year-old son. And he was there for a cheerleading event. And there was a lot of it that was much more relaxed than, because we were really at the whim of some of the scheduling of the event. And so I had to let a lot of it go. And I would say it was a little tricky for me. But I would say, again, I really kind of do both. One of the tips that I have in the book is to, especially if you're going with a big group or you have people that really have things that you know that they have boxes they have to check, is to have people send you their top three. When we had the group of 11, I had everybody send me the top three things that they wanted to do. And I said, I cannot promise you that these things will happen, but I'll do my best. So then I at least kind of knew what was an A list and a B list of things that we wanted to try to get to and see and do. And we didn't get to everything. And I think being okay with that is one of those hard parts. But I also think you have to be sensible. Disney is a marathon. It is not a sprint. If you try to sprint through Disney, you're going to be feeling it for weeks after, and you'll probably miss out on some of the really great parts of being at Disney. So I always encourage people, make sure you have breaks scheduled in there. Make sure you have at least a sit-down meal a couple of times in your trip so you can just sit down and absorb being with the people that you're there with. Because right. when you're on an attraction, you're not really doing that, not spending time together. So that's one of the things I love about the food aspect of Disney is using meals as really that opportunity to connect with the people that you're there with.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't want to have to need a vacation from your vacation.
No.
Because I've really done that.
You find that you need a vacation from Disney?
I need a vacation from my vacation because, like you're saying, I try to always do it as a sprint and not a marathon. So I'm usually exhausted at the end of my trip, typically back in the day.
You know, it's interesting you say it because one of the things that it's almost like you can have two types of vacations. And sometimes you get that perfect vacation where it's both, where it's you have a physical break or a mental break. And, you know, when you can have a vacation that has both a physical and a mental break, that's amazing. But usually you have to be European and get 6 weeks of vacation. The way that it works here in the States with, you know, the fact that you can, you know, usually only get a week, it's like by the time that you shut yourself off from work, you're 3 days into your vacation, so then you get 2 days before you're thinking about what you're dreading, what you're going back to. But what we found with Disney is we almost get in a bubble when we're there, where you can really shut out the outside world, and it's easy to do. That's one of the reasons we usually stay on property as well, is it makes it easier to stay inside that bubble. So we may go back physically tired, but mentally there's been a break from all that's going on outside. So outside of the Disney bubble, and that's sometimes what at least we've as a family need as much as the physical break.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. Yeah. So we're looking at the book. Can you give us a quick overview? And obviously, the first thing is we want everybody to go out and buy a copy of the book. So we don't want you to give too much away. But could you tell us about how the chapters are broken down? Because you have very interesting grouping specifically about how you broke your chapters down. I think it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the book is broken into four experiences, and those four experiences are kind of the four big trips that we've taken. So there's Experience 2005, which is Disney for 8, which was when we had our Disney wedding, and we had our four kids, my husband and I, and then my parents as well. Then I have Experience 2007, which is Disney for 2, and I was actually at Disney for work for a conference, and my husband came down, and we just did just a little bit of time in the parks, but he had a really interesting experience with the Swan Hotel that I really wanted to share. And then Experience 2013, which is Disney for 3, and this was when we took, my husband and I took our son. So we have these, yours, mine, and ours. And so our little guy obviously didn't exist in 2005 when we went, and he would always get very upset by pictures where he wasn't in them. And he really wanted to go to Disney, so we did take him. And then I have Experience 2015, which is Disney for 11. And then within each of those experiences, there's chapters that are usually broken down kind of following the days of the trip. But I tried to get creative with the names of them. So instead of saying, you know, the Disney wedding, it's the Evil Stepmother's Disney wedding. I have celebrating 5 years of Oliver, and this was where when we went to Disney in 2013 and celebrated my son's 5th birthday. And then, for example, the day in Disney for 11 back in 2015, the Kingdom of Bollywood and Everest. This is where I talk about our day at Animal Kingdom, where we actually have, embarrassing enough, on video, a whole group of us doing Bollywood-style dancing. We got caught. The rhythm got us.
We got to see that video. Tell me that somewhere on the internet.
It is not, thank God, my dad is a photographer, and he's not really on social media yet. He takes amazing pictures of Disney. But, yes, it's so funny because my son Austin, who's a teenager, he was like, I am not going out there because I know this video will be used against me. And so we got pretty much everybody else out there, but he just was like, no, I refuse. I'm not going out there. And then my dad for Christmas actually did a DVD for us of all the pictures, and then he inserted video clips in there, and of course that video was in there. So it did. But no, it's not on the internet. Though I have posted some embarrassing pictures. The Chewbacca one I mentioned earlier from the 90s. I got some nice Coke bottle glasses going on. So I'm not.
It's a good look.
I'm not afraid to post embarrassing things.
Right.
Bollywood dancing, not quite yet.
We're all going to get Slumdog Millionaire up in here. Come on. That'd be awesome.
All right. So you got married at Disney. John officiated a wedding at Disney. And actually, friends of ours had gotten married. He was the person that married them at the wedding pavilion. So tell us about your Disney wedding experience. What did you do? Where did you go? Where did you have the ceremony, if you did? And all that kind of stuff.
So we had what at the time in 2005 was called an intimate ceremony. I know that there's a similar package these days. I think it's got a slightly different name. But you could have a max of 13 people, and that included the bride and the groom. So we actually had some friends really mad at us. We had a friend of ours that's known my husband for a long time, and that I've known for a number of years now, too, that had wanted to officiate our wedding. Well, what happened was when we decided to get married at Disney and we had this max of 13 people in the package that we had to really kind of make tough choices. My husband is one of 10 kids. So they don't travel light. If you invite one person, you have 40. There's no 13, max of 13 when you're one of 10 kids. So we had to make some really tough choices about who to have. And so, but it's funny you mentioned the officiating because our friend had really wanted to officiate. But yeah, we had a max of 13. And then originally the ceremony was supposed to take place at the Rose Gazebo, which is right in the courtyard of the yacht club. It's an intimate space. It's a quieter space. Really the only people that can really see you are people staying in one of the areas of the yacht club hotel. It doesn't have a lot of foot traffic. Well, the morning of our wedding, it decided to rain, as it does in Florida. The planner called me and said, well, we have to move your location. We found another kind of like a gazebo space, but it's in a slightly different location. And so we had all this buildup on like, oh, all these people were so mad that they couldn't come and see. Well, the place that we got married was right at the edge of where Beach Club and Yacht Club come together. There's a... it's almost like a porch space, and it's right by the pool for Beach Club, which, as you both probably know, mm-hmm. very popular space. Mm-hmm. It's also on the walkway as you're coming off the boat when you're coming from Yacht Club of Beach Club. So right. Not only did we not far exceed the 13 people watching our wedding, we had like a line of people that, you know, are standing there in their shorts and their, you know, their cargo shorts and their sandals and socks that had just come back from the parks that were like cheering us on as we were getting married because we were in this incredibly public space. So that was where the ceremony was, and it ended up being really fun. It was kind of a blast. We just really didn't realize they were there until we kissed and we had this huge applause and we were like, wait, what? And
there's just what happened?
People and just strangers.
That's awesome.
But no, it was a nice ceremony. It was a nice area. One of the upgrades that we did that we were really happy about is we got the photojournalistic style photography. So they did both portrait and the photojournalistic style. And cool. Some of those pictures, the prep trying to get 8 people, 4 of them kids, to cooperate in a photo. Some of getting that to happen are some of our favorite photos. Like we have nice posed ones, but we've got ones where they're just crazy and insane, which is a great reflection of our kids. And I have one where my son, Austin, who was 5 at the time, is just like laying on the bench, like, please, can this be over? I am bored out of my soul. And it was like a 10-minute ceremony. And he was just like, I can't stand still anymore. We also had a videographer. We have a VHS of our wedding. Have no way of watching it. Don't watch it once. Decided never again. It was kind of one of those things that you think, oh, I need a video of my wedding. And then you realize, no, I didn't really need a video of my wedding. But now, yeah, we have this VHS tape and no way of watching it at all. We have no VHS recorder.
So that was the getting married at Walt Disney World. And you've talked about this earlier. 11 people at Disney seems like kind of a large group. How did that go?
So that was in 2015, and we had said we're going to go back for our 10-year anniversary. And when you tell kids that you're going to go to Disney when they're 8, just know that they'll remember, even if it's 10 years later.
Right.
So our daughter Annie, who was 8 when we went in 2005, was like, "We're going." You said it's 10 years later. It's 10 years later. We're going. And so that started the planning for a group of 11. So we had our now 5 kids. And then our oldest, Nate, his girlfriend, who is now his wife, she was with us. And then our daughter, Annie, who's in college, her boyfriend came with us as well. And then my parents. So we had 11 of us. My parents smartly stay at a different resort than us so that they get a break, which is nice for them and I think is necessary.
Yep.
They love Coronado Springs. That's where they stayed. We actually stayed at Kidani Village and a 2-bedroom villa. So we had 9 of us in the villa.
Wow.
Yeah. So
you know how you said you need a break from your vacation after?
Yes.
I love our family. I love when we're together. We all needed a break from each other by the end of that 7 days.
So
like it's a lot. It's a small space for 9 people.
So how were you guys getting around? Were you just using Disney transportation? Did you have a van? Did you Uber? Oh wait, Uber wasn't around then. How were you physically getting that many people around Walt Disney World? I'm not trying to be nosy. I'm just very interested in how that all worked out.
Yeah, actually, so we had in 2005, we kind of had a negative experience with Magical Express, and so I was kind of not down on Magical Express. I used it in 2016 and didn't have an issue, but in 2015, when you've got a group of 11, the amount of luggage just that a group of 11 accumulates is a lot. So we actually used a car service, and the name is escaping me, and I feel really badly about that. But we used a car service, and it was really great because this car service actually makes a stop on the way into the parks. So you can go to a grocery store, you can go to, you know, Uber Walgreens, where they have kind of a grocery store set up. So this guy, the guy that picked us up when we had a group of 11, they actually had kind of like one of those big white, we call it in the Midwest, called a big church van, where you can sit like 20 people in a van. So we had one of those, and then they put all of our luggage in a trailer in the back.
Yeah.
So we weren't, you know, shoving suitcases under our feet or anything like that. So that's how we got to and from the parks. And then once we were there, we just used Disney Transport. And that's one of the things, being a mom of kids that range in ages at the time we're at Disney from 7 to 26. What's so great about Disney is the majority of those kids, you can be confident and feel good about them going off and getting to do some things on their own. They're getting to stress their own independence, and they're safe. They can get on a bus. They'll be safe on that bus. They can go in the park. They'll be safe getting in the park. It's almost like there's, you know, chaperones in the form of the cast members all over the place. And especially now with the magic bands, you know, it's more the parents getting lost than the kids. So it's really nice it's a great vacation for us because the kids can really, most of them can go off on their own. Now, obviously, our 7-year-olds, that's not the case, but the teenagers really, it's safe, completely safe to let them go off on their own. And exploring is safe. It's not like they can really get that lost. If you don't even have that concern of, where are you? I don't know. Get a map.
Can you see the castle?
Yeah. You see a gigantic tree. Yeah. It's more like my parents are more likely to where are we? I don't know where you are. I don't know. But yeah, so yeah, and we got everybody on Disney Transport. Most of the time we were able to make it on buses together. One of the great parts about Kidani is that they have their own bus stop. So most of the time you're not sharing with Animal Kingdom Lodge. I know some of the villa resorts, you have that where you might have to sit for a couple bus rounds because the buses are too full. With Kidani, that we never had that issue.
Yeah. Wow. So my question is, 11 people, how do you get a dining reservation, or where do you go to eat? Because I could barely get a dining reservation for 6, never mind 11.
It's funny. So we wanted to go back to GECO. We went to GECO after our Disney wedding in 2005, and so we wanted to go back there in 2015. Our kids were really excited because they remember that it was unique and different, but not really appreciating it at the time. And so that, to get a reservation at GECO, it's a totally different system than a typical Disney dining reservation. You actually make it directly with the restaurant. And it was a little tricky. There seemed to be a lot of confusion. Originally they told me we can only take your party at 9 o'clock at night. And I was like, yeah, that's not really going to work. How about this time? And so we ended up getting the reservation that we wanted at the time that we wanted. And then we just actually took the bus. I'm trying to remember, Carly. So I think my parents took an Uber from their resort at Coronado. They took an Uber or a Lyft over to Animal Kingdom Lodge. And then we just hopped on a bus and let them know we needed to go over to the Animal Kingdom Lodge. And the bus dropped us off there. Getting back was trickier. And a lot of folks think that Kanani Village is part of Animal Kingdom Lodge. It's about a mile walk between the two. There are some paths, but it's not necessarily, it wasn't necessarily designed to be this, you know, beautiful path to go between the two. So you can walk between them, but it is kind of a hike, and there's not really too much transportation between the two, especially when you hit a certain point at night. So some of us hopped in the cab with my parents. They dropped us off at Kidani and then took my parents back to Coronado, and then another group of us walked. So with GECO, it was interesting. Be Our Guest, I have a trick for Be Our Guest. I've used it with 11. I've used it with 4. There's a lot of diligence in it, but I also think when you're doing a big group like that, most restaurants you have to call. They usually, you can't book online for, I think it's usually more than 6 to 8. So I just called Disney Dining and walked it through with the dining person that I was working with. And I typically try to call Disney Dining regardless of the trip, just to see if they have any suggestions, if there's something new. So that helped a lot with having a really good person that answered the phone when I called a couple of different times. And then Be Our Guest, I got really lucky and got a reservation for lunch for 5. Somebody must have just canceled. Mm. And then I literally went probably 2 or 3 times a day for months and tried to get a reservation for 6, and then would try for a reservation of 5, and then try a reservation of 4, 3, 2, all the way down to 1. I ended up to get 11 and to Be Our Guest for lunch, I ended up 6 or 7 different dining reservations.
Wow.
A lot of them for a group of 1 or 2. And I called Disney Dining and kind of said, this is the situation. Can we consolidate this? And they said, nope, not without losing all of them. But because it's quick service, what we did is we just went at the time of the very first one, and the cast members had no issue just letting us all in together.
Wow.
We just went in together. And so that's what I always recommend to people is, you know, usually if you get it anywhere between like a 20 and 30 minute time frame, they'll usually let you in, because I don't know that I've been to Be Our Guest where there hasn't been a line to place your order. So it's not as if you're getting in there in the dining room at your exact reservation time anyway.
Yeah. Unless it's dinner, maybe.
The dinner is obviously the sit-down dinner, so it works very differently. That, you would have to have them all at the same time. Yeah. But for breakfast and lunch, it's both the quick service style, so you're finding your own seating. And then a cast member was nice enough to help us with finding seating so that we could actually all sit together, too, at Be Our Guest.
Yeah, it sounds like GECO, they sent you to the group dining number.
Yeah, they sent us there, and then I was working directly with somebody at GECO for a period as well. So it ended up working out, and we get to sit in this wine room, which is a room that they don't always have open at GECO, which is this really beautiful space. It is just gorgeous in that room. It's beautiful. And the dining room at GECO is beautiful. This space especially was really nice. It was very intimate. And it was just the food, everything at GECO is an incredible experience.
Right. So what would you tell somebody is your best money saving tip if they want to go to Disney?
I would have to say getting the Disney Visa. Is that okay for me to say?
Sure.
really for us, we don't go to Disney that much. And when we're going, obviously we're taking a big group of people. So you really have to know that you're going to have sticker shock when you're taking 11 people. But the Disney Visa was awesome for us because it saved us money, for a lot of signature dining. The Disney Visa, you get 10% off. GECO for 11 is not a $20 dinner. As you can imagine, it's more about $800. And so when you're saving 10% on that, and then we would also, my husband has the Premier Disney Visa, and so he gets 2% back on all purchases. I have the regular one. I get 1% back. So we got them about 6 or 7 months before we left, used the cards for purchases. We also were able to buy our vacation on the Disney Visa, and then we got 6 months no interest, no payments on the vacation. There was a special running at that time. And so then we use that, and then you also get 10% off any merchandise purchase over $50, and that's anywhere. We use that at a little kiosk buying some pins and some sunglasses and a bottle of water. So that really applies pretty much anywhere on the merchandise side. And then because we had used it in advance, we also went with rewards redemption cards, which are basically like gift cards. You can use them anywhere in Disney, anywhere in Disney World, you can use them at the Disney store. And we went with those, and I think we had well over $400 on those Disney redemption cards, which are basically just essentially like having cash at Disney.
Yeah, sure.
So it was, that was really a big one for us. We've also found the villas to be money saving for us, because if we tried to get the number of hotel rooms that we'd have to get to have a group of nine, that's multiple hotel rooms, and Disney doesn't guarantee that they'll connect your rooms. So there's no promise if you say you decide to book at the Boardwalk Inn versus the Boardwalk Villas that your rooms will actually be connected. I've tried multiple times to do that. And so the villas end up saving us money in that we're all able to be together. We don't have to have multiple bookings, multiple rooms. And then also, we tend to eat breakfast in the room and we get snacks and stuff like that. So it does save us some money from that aspect of, you know, reducing the amount of meals that we're really, you know, going out and searching for in the resort or in the park.
Right. Yeah.
Well, throughout the book, you have different little secret tips that you like to share. Can you share one of them, maybe that either didn't make the book or it's one that is one of your personal favorites?
Well, I'll share one of my personal favorites is, and this is more geared towards folks with kids, but use an umbrella stroller. Bring your own. Get an umbrella stroller and use that in the parks. I'm sure you both have been to the parks enough. You've seen the people with the gigantic Cadillac stroller.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're just huge. And you'll see them trying to get on the monorail with it. And then or even just trying to close it up. Like, I've seen dads get left behind trying to close up the stroller quickly before getting on the monorail. If your kid is usually 5 months and older, they can hold their head up in an umbrella stroller. So that's one. And we used one of those when we went with Oliver in 2013. And it was great. Because you never realize, I know some people rent strollers at the parks as well. You don't realize how heavy your four-year-old is until you're carrying them from the exit of Magic Kingdom to a bus stop.
Oh, yeah.
That is a heavy kid. They're asleep, because I don't know, most kids are asleep by the time they live in Magic. Most parents would love to be asleep. If you're renting, you've got to take your kid out of the stroller and leave it there. And if your stroller is big, you're probably going to have to take your kid out of the stroller to get on the bus. Umbrella strollers, a lot of times you can just roll right up on the bus as well if they're not too full, because they don't take up much more space than a person. That's one of my big ones. And I always tell people to use dining not as just a way to save money, but use it as an opportunity to connect with the people that you're there with. Disney puts as much magic into those dining experiences as they do those attractions. All that you see and love when you go on Space Mountain and you see the theming at Peter Pan's Flight and the theming at Expedition Everest, that same attention to detail and all that the Imagineers do, they put that into the dining with the menu and the location and the decorations, and the experience is all in dining as well. And so I really encourage people at least once or twice on your trip do something, go somewhere, eat food from a new world, try something new. You're on vacation. That's when the time to try new things. And it's also just an opportunity to really sit and connect with the people that you've paid all this money to be on vacation with.
Yeah. I know Walmart, any Walmart near a Disney hotel sells the $9.99 umbrella stroller. And I think everybody just goes and buys it. I've seen them left at the TTC. I've seen them left at the Magic Kingdom, because after they're done, they just leave them. They're done. You know, they're not going to take them back, on a plane or whatever. They just, come buy the $10 stroller and just leave it somewhere,
Yeah, it's really a lifesaver. I've always, after having done it, I'm like, why would you ever deal with a big, huge one? But the other thing, too, is a lot of people forget. I mean, I'm from Chicago, and Chicago O'Hare is a gigantic airport. Mm. You will be walking a lot. Some airports are smaller, but you will be walking in that airport. And it is so nice to take a kid on a plane who's just been sitting and relaxing for a little while. Then, you're trying to hustle them through an airport. And if you are having to hustle through an airport, it's a lot easier to do it when you're pushing a kid in a stroller. Right. And those strollers are gate checked. So you don't even have to check them in. They will take it right before you get on the plane. You can roll your kid even down all the way to right before you get on the plane. They gate check it there, and they will meet you with that stroller as you're getting off the plane.
Yeah. And EPCOT stands for Every Parent Carries Out a Toddler, just to remind everybody.
and you never know how long the bus is going to take.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those things that I remember one of my favorite Disney stories is we saw this dad for like 5 minutes trying to push this like triple wide stroller onto the monorail. And so we sat there for 5 minutes listening to, please hold on to the handrails. Please stay clear of the doors. Or before I'm on Tegate, I'll have to say this protest for like 5 minutes because the doors kept trying to close.
Yeah.
And like the stroller was not going in. And he was like, the stroller is going in. And so then it was just this weird discombobulated thing. We left him trying to get off of the monorail because we thought this was going to go on for a while. I'm not sure how he was going to get it back off the monorail after having gotten it on. But yeah, after that, I'm like, never again, umbrella stroller. I wish they had them for adults. I would use one.
Oh, yeah. I wish somebody pushed me around in a stroller.
I know, right? Especially Epcot. Epcot especially. Oh.
I agree. Need like a brand new pair of sneakers to get around that park or hoverboard. All right, Trish, tell everybody where they can find your book, where they can buy your book, and then, if they have questions or want to follow up with you, anything that where they can find you maybe on the internet.
So the book is available on Amazon. It's in both print as well as Kindle. And the cool thing is when you buy the print copy, you actually get the Kindle version free. So I tell people, buy the print copies, give that away as a gift, and keep the Kindle copy for yourself. They're kind of getting two books in one. It's called The Not-So-Evil Stepmother in the Most Magical Place on Earth, and it's planning your Walt Disney World family vacation. And again, you can find it on Amazon in both versions. I am on the internet. I'm officially on Facebook. I kind of put that off for a really, really long time. I've only been on Facebook for like a month, which people laugh at me when I say that. But so I'm on Facebook as just Trisha Dobb, and the last name is D-A-A-B. I'm also really active on Instagram, which is how I found you all. And I'm on Instagram as NotSoEvil_DisneyStepmom.
All right. That sounds great. We want to thank you for coming on and giving us all this great information. I think people need some help sometimes planning their trip. So this will be helpful information. So thank you for coming on. Thank you for spending the time with us. Any final thoughts?
Just thank you all for getting the word out about Disney, having ways for all of us who are missing Disney to have a way to engage with it when we're between park visits, and for having me on. I really appreciate it. It was really fun.
All right.
That's great.
Perfect. And as we'd like to say around here, we'll see you in the parks.
The Disney Parks Podcast is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company. All Disney parks, attractions, lands, shows, event names, etc. are registered trademarks of the Walt Disney Company.
Like a boat out of the blue, fate steps in and sees you through.